it's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. And we've been doing this for the better part of 6 years now. And I keep trying to help people understand how complex we are as human beings. So yes, we're in a physical form, obviously, and we have emotions, we know that. But we also have aspects of ourselves that are spiritual in nature and intellectual in nature. And I refer to it as like a four-legged stool or a table. If you've ever been someplace where you sat on a stool like that or you sat at a table like that, it's really annoying because every time you move, your stool or your table moves. And so it's out of balance. And what I believe is really important for your physical and emotional well-being is to keep our lives in balance. So we don't want to become overly emotional about anything. And I know a lot of people were with the recent election. I think we want to focus on being physically healthy, because without your physical health, the rest of it is incredibly difficult to maintain. And when you want to be learning something, to me, every day, if you can learn a little something that you didn't know the day before, that's what adds to making you complex. You don't want to be talking about the same stuff over and over that you did 20 years ago or 30 years ago. You want to be moving forward in your life. And I tell people, I want to be learning right up until my last breath. I'm hoping I get that aha, I knew there was another dimension, kind of an experience at the end of my life. And then the spiritual connection is just with our higher power. I believe that we have guardian angels. I believe we have guides. I believe there's a religious component if that is of your nature, but we do have a spiritual connection, and that kind of rounds us out and helps us to be, I think, more fully alive, if you want to look at it that way. If you go to my website, which is synergyconnectionradio.com, there are, I think, 35 pages now of shows. So there's a lot of different shows to choose from. Each one has a synopsis, and you can read the synopsis, and maybe that will tempt you to listen to the show. There's always a way to get in touch with my guest on that synopsis. And there's also a link that's going to take you into Boomers Forever Young. That is a company that sponsors this show. I've been using their products for almost 8 years. And the newest product that I'm talking about right now, and I have for the last several shows, is Myotrol. So it's M as in Mary, Y as in yellow, O as in Oscar, T as in Tom, R as in Ralph, O is an Oscar, L is an Lucky, and you will be lucky if you use this product, I guarantee you. It is only available through Boomers Forever Young, and it does add stamina, endurance, strength. We lose 1% of our muscle mass every single year after the age of 50, and this particular product helps to rebuild muscle. And I cannot tell you the number of people that I am hearing now that are over 60 that are falling. And when you fall, you know, I don't want to say the end is in sight, but you're never the same. You know, you're damaging your myofascia tissue, but you're also damaging a lot more of just your healing ability. And I'm sure all of you know of someone that has fractured a hip or fractured an arm or done something. I mean, athletes do it as well, but when you're younger, you heal faster. And if you know with kids, I mean, they bounce right back up. An athlete doesn't necessarily bounce right back up, but guaranteed if you're over 50, you're not going to bounce right back up. So check out Myotrol. If you're on the website, there's I don't know how many hundreds of testimonies now, but a bunch. And there's a video, there's a lot of explanation of what this product does. If you decide you want to try any of their products, the company allows me to give you a 15% discount. All you do is type in my name, L-U-C-Y, and the discount is automatically applied. Like I said, I've been using the Myotrol since March, and it has made a huge difference in my overall strength and stamina for sure. And I play golf and I'm very active. So I hope all of you get a chance to look at it, and maybe some of you will choose to try it. All right, so I have as my guest today Dr. Michael Orkin, and we're going to be talking about synchronicity. And I have had synchronicity in my life, I think, since I really believe maybe even in my early 20s, I began to notice it. And it's coming with greater regularity because I think sometimes when you are open, when your chakras are maybe in balance, when you're listening rather than just talking all the time, these things happen. And so Dr. Orkin has written a book. He's going to talk to you about that you'll be able to get on Amazon. But welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Lucy. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. So you said you studied Carl Jung. You read almost everything that he ever wrote and probably talked about. And so how does synchronicity, for a lot of people, they may not even know who Carl Jung is, but how does synchronicity and Carl Jung kind of get married here?
Well, Carl Jung was a very famous, he was a 20th century psychiatrist, and he sort of became very well known in the 1960s and 70s. He wrote about lots of things. He was very into the sort of modern types of psychoanalysis that, and himself, he sort of invented or discovered lots of principles of psychology and psychiatry that became very well known during his time. And he wrote, now I, a little background on myself. So I'm a statistician. I went to U University of California, Berkeley, and I was there in the 1960s. And Berkeley at that time was very, very active in the field of not just the university, but I'm talking about the city of Berkeley, in the field of things like synchronicity. It was a very popular topic. And Jung was a very articulate person. My background was in statistics, but I was interested in probability. I was interested in luck. I was interested in chance. I was interested in randomness. And Carl Jung did a lot of research and wrote a book, or maybe you could call it a monograph, called Synchronicity and Acausal Connecting Principle. And this monograph was extremely interesting because, from my point of view as a statistician, because Carl Jung was trying to observe connecting principles between things, because people, this happens all the time, as you mentioned, Lucy. Something will happen, and then something will happen later, and it seems like the two things are connected. Maybe one predicts the other. Statisticians are one of their main tasks is to try to predict things using statistical methods. And Carl Jung thought there was this other thing that caused these weird connections that seemed to be happening all the time. And so I was really interested in that. It was fit right in, actually, with my graduate studies. And since then, I've been a professor. I've written a number of research papers, and I've also done a lot of consulting and written a few books, including the book that I just published called The Story of Chance: What's Luck Got to Do with It, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I have a number of, I mentioned Jung a number of times because there's this connection, and Jung was not a statistician, so he didn't have the same background that people who study randomness and things like that have. But somehow he was able to distill a lot of things from his own life, in particular, things that happened between him and his patients as a psychiatrist, that seemed like they weren't just like part of the Newtonian view of the world, where the world is like a giant clock and everything happens in like a clock works, which people, physicists and statisticians, discovered is simply not true. It may be true as an approximation in some situations, but quantum mechanics and other things have shown that randomness, and I, as a statistician, I like to say, talk about how powerful randomness is in our world. But it fits nicely into Jung's principles. If you think of synchronicity, some of the examples he gives sort of fit into my world too. So I think the scientific world hasn't fully recognized Jung's discoveries, and people in my world like to think about randomness and luck as something different than synchronicity, but really it isn't, as far as I'm concerned. And these things sort of blend together. I could give, let me give you an example. You want me to keep going, Lucy, or
Yeah,
you
no, I wanted you to kind of give an example that people can relate to maybe in their own life. I know the roulette wheel and things like that are part of randomness, right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, when people bet, but to me, I will place a bet on a horse because I can look at a horse and pretty much understand whether they're going to win or not just by watching their body and watching the jockey. And I've been very fortunate in that ability, but I don't gamble. I don't go to the gambling table and play blackjack or the roulette wheel or anything like that because that is out of my bailiwick. I don't understand how that works. And my mom was very, very good at blackjack. She won a lot in Vegas, but I stay away from that. So.
Yeah, well, so the couple of things that you mentioned are very, very interesting and apply directly to the types of things that I'm involved in. And let's talk about the first thing you said, was how you have some kind of intuition, or whatever you want to call it, that will tell you whether a horse is likely to win a race. And so what you said is something that's sort of beyond luck. It's something that not everybody can do. It's like this intuitive skill that you have. So I've worked on a lot of projects as a consultant in which I have to identify the difference between luck and skill. So if you're, and that skill might be something that's just inherent or ingrained in your personality or in your whole aura. It doesn't have to mean that you spent, 10 years studying how to do something.
Right.
And yeah, and so where did that come from? Well, as a statistician, what I've done, and so the background on this is that there are a number of game developers who are trying to get their games online on the iPhone or the Android, and have those games be allow wagering. And it's not so easy to do that. You have to get the approval of the regulators, of the bank, of the iPhone store or the Android store. And because, and the reason is interesting, even though the laws are sort of relaxing a little, you still pretty much have to show that your game is a game of skill. Now, to me, a game of skill could be horse racing for exactly the reason that you mentioned. It doesn't have to mean that I took lessons for 5 years to learn how to play chess, which is also, of course, a game of skill. And so how do I identify whether a game is a game of skill, which I have to do as a consultant in order for my client to get on the App Store or to get on the Android store? And what I do is I look at data from all of the people who have been playing this game. It doesn't have to be for money, just to look at how they did, how they won and lost. And I can identify statistically which ones did better than luck. So the whole topic could be called, how do you identify something that's better than luck? And I don't care if, I mean, I do care, but there are various different ways people have skill, and I'm not interested in, oh, I have a degree in this, or I spent 10 years studying that. If someone like you comes along and can identify winning horses just because of your personal knowledge, however it got there, intuitive or otherwise, then that'll show up in the data. And so when I look at things like this, I'm always sort of stunned by how there are these people who do really well, do better than luck, and don't necessarily have a statistic, don't necessarily have a background of playing a particular game. They just have this intuition or whatever sixth sense or whatever you want to call it. And I think that falls in the category of synchronicity, in the sense that there's this connecting principle. That's what I'm quoting Jung there. Acausal, he uses that word a lot, which means there isn't necessarily a cause and effect thing. I can't pin that down. But there are people who do really well when they're playing a game or whatever, better than luck. So I can identify as a statistician when something is better than luck. And if you've looked at, if you've been reading, we just had an election, of course, and there were public opinion polls done every day, and trying to predict the winner. And there's something in public opinion polls called the margin of error. Margin of error is sort of how much you have to allow for chance before you can predict that this person's going to be the winner. So I like to call identifying people with these certain skills beyond the margin of error. In other words, they're doing stuff that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to do, and it doesn't fall in the realm of chance. And so there are every single consult I've done literally dozens of consulting jobs in the last couple of years on this very topic. And you find people doing what now, people doing better than luck in lots of different game type situations. But as you know, Lucy, games are what life is made up of.
Exactly. I was also thinking, the word hunch. You hear people saying, "I have a hunch that this is going to work." And I'm also thinking that, whether you're an investor in the stock market, that plays a role in all of this too, that you can look at a dozen stocks and how they're performing. But again, that intuitive part of you may guide you. Now, would that be synchronous, or again, is that more intuition guiding you to make that choice?
Well, probably both those things. And I would say that's another very interesting area, playing the stock market. So let's look at things from us, look at a sort of a big picture of games. There are some games, like if you go into the casino, like craps and roulette, you mentioned earlier, spinning roulette wheel, that are games of pure chance. I mean, no matter how good your hunches are, no matter how intuitive you are, in the long run, you won't do very well because that's just the nature of the game. You can show it mathematically. But there are other games. It's interesting that you mentioned blackjack and that your mother was a blackjack player, because blackjack is one of those games
That's skill because you have
where
to know
you
the
can be skilled.
cards.
Yeah, most people aren't skilled at blackjack, but some people are very can do very well. Now they can learn the computer simulations, learn the strategy based on computer simulations that a mathematician named Ed Thorp did way back in the 1960s. I have a chapter on that in my book. And that sort of broke open the whole blackjack world, because before then, nobody thought blackjack could be beaten. They thought it was like craps and roulette. But there are people who haven't learned all the strategies, who can somehow just intuitively know, not very many people, but some.
And my mom was that way, quite honestly. She was a little blonde, and she played mostly with men at the table. And I think they all thought she was just this cute little lady. And she was deadly. I mean, she won. And I think the biggest purse she won at a tournament was almost $100,000. So she knew what she was doing, but it was intuitive. Whereas my dad was a CPA, and it used to drive him nuts because he wanted, like count the cards, know how many are out there, and she was just like, I'm doing it my way.
That's funny you say that because my aunt was like that, but she was a bridge player, but nobody ever taught her how to play bridge. She just sort of learned how, and she used to win bridge tournaments all over the country. And in fact, her sister, my other aunt, one of my other aunts, used to play with her sometimes or play against her. And they, my aunt who won the tournaments was so good at it that her sister just refused to play anymore with her. And they both had the same ability to learn things. They were both equally smart, but somehow she just had this intuitive knowledge.
Well, what happens, and I've mentioned this on other shows, is we have 40 million brain cells that are actually in our heart. And the heart is your intuitive center. And so if you learn to go to your heart and check the intuitive knowledge you have, I think you will always make the best decision. And so that gut decision, it's not even a hunch. It's like you feel it in your gut. You know it's the right thing to do. And if you listen, it works.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the brain cells in the heart, but it sounds completely sensible to me for that to happen. Now, so there are these certain activities like that you mentioned, the stock market, blackjack, and a lot of the games that I've analyzed that are in this sort of category that Jung would say synchronicity is possible there. And I as a statistician, might put it in slightly different words and say, well, skill is possible there, but it's really the same thing in a way. Now, there are other areas, and I talk about some of these other areas in my book, for example, the lottery. Well, the Mega Millions lottery is another one of these games of pure chance. So let's look at that as a contrast. Your chance of winning if you buy a ticket, the Mega Millions is along with Powerball are two multi-state lotteries. Mega Millions, your chance of winning if you buy one ticket is about 1 in 303 million. And to put that in perspective, and it's all chance. You're betting against random numbers. Because when you buy a lottery ticket, you pick some numbers and then numbers are drawn at random. So to put that in perspective, if you buy 50 tickets a week, on the average, you'll win the jackpot about once every 116,000 years. If you have to drive a mile every time you buy a ticket, you'll drive an average of 633 round trips to the moon before you win the jackpot. And so, and if one more analogy, if you know one person in the entire country of Canada and put everybody's name in a hat, and then you do two things. You buy a lottery ticket and you draw a name out of the entire population of Canada from the hat, you're 8 times more likely to pick your friend out of the entire population of Canada than you are to win the jackpot. And so that brings up a very interesting question, namely, if it's so unlikely to win, it sounds impossible, how come there are winners? How come there are jackpot winners? Because when you read about Powerball and Mega Millions, I've been talking about Mega Millions, and every few weeks there's a winner, maybe even more frequently. So why is that? And the answer is, this is one of the basic principles of randomness and chance. Because so many people buy tickets, because millions of tickets are sold. And so, just by chance, if you have enough people playing the game, there will be winners. And so, that's sort of a basic principle of randomness, which is this: given enough opportunity, in this case, tickets sold, any weird thing will happen just due to chance. So, this is a this is very important when trying to understand the world we live in. Don't get thrown off just because weird things happen. Now, in my consulting, as I mentioned, also in my research, I separate these weird things that happen just by chance from people who are skilled or people who have intuitions. To me, it's all just doing better than luck. So, as I say, beyond the margin of error, you get these people, and it happens in other situations too, that are doing better than they would just by guessing or just by buying lottery tickets. And what's the reason for that? Well, there could be many, there are many reasons, but one of them could very well be related to the things that Jung was talking about and to the things that you were talking about. Namely, you see a horse and you can pick somehow be able to pick that horse, and that horse wins, then that's skill, but it's also something else. And that something else is what Jung wrote about. And
Yeah,
that
and I don't know exactly what it is. Like with this last Kentucky Derby, I was watching the horses and I had joined FanDuel
Oh,
just
yeah.
for that race. I don't do anything else with it, but I'm always a Derby player. And I looked at the horses and I chose, got my bet in, and I picked the winner and the runner up.
Oh,
Oh, and so
wow.
I got money back, from my bet. Now, because I won, I think the danger is when you do win, then I think there's a belief that says, oh, I'm good at this. And you start investing more than you have the money to invest. And you end up losing. And pretty soon, you're in that losing part. And I think the stock market can be that way too, like picking the stocks that you think are going to win. But I always tell people don't ever invest more in anything like that than you can afford to lose.
Right, and I actually have that pretty much that same that sentence in my book, because okay, let me give you an example. It's similar to what you're talking about. You're exactly right. People can be really good. So first of all, I encourage people to try to develop the areas that they seem to be good at. For example, I mean, that doesn't mean you become a professional horse player if you're intuitive about selecting horse, but just try to embrace those areas and understand how fortunate you are to have certain intuitions. But I have a ch I'm sure you've heard of the former crypto king, Sam Bankman-Fried, otherwise known as SBF, who was a very smart guy. Yeah, he's a young guy. He's probably around 30 now. And he went to MIT, has a degree in math and physics, and became, in just the space of a few years, a billionaire and known as the crypto king, because he started a cryptocurrency website, and that's what he did, crypto investing. He had another company in which they invested in cryptocurrency. But you just said a couple minutes ago, Lucy, that you shouldn't bet more than you can afford to lose. Well, that's absolutely correct. And in fact, a mathematician way back in the 1950s named Kelly, who worked at Bell Labs in New Jersey, developed something called the Kelly criterion. And it's a type of investing in which you are forced to not bet more than you can afford to lose, because it's called a fixed fraction method. It's been applied to blackjack. And what it says basically is, you bet a fixed fraction of how much money you have each time. So if you start getting more and more from winning, you bet a higher fraction. But if you start losing,
A
you're
lower
betting less and
fraction.
less. And so it's really hard to go broke if you use that. So back to Sam Bankman-Fried, otherwise known as SBF. He made tons of money, but he didn't know that simple fact. And this was what he did for a living, but he started betting huge. And there was a book written about him. There were actually a bunch of books written about him, but a guy named Zeke Faux, Faux, wrote a book called Number Go Up, in which he had many interviews with SBF. And SBF would identify these situations in the crypto world, which is sort of like the stock market, that have what's called positive expected value, which means you can win on the average. But when he identified them, he would bet everything. And if you bet everything, even if you're good at it, like you say, like if you know you're good at picking horses and you bet everything each time, you're
You're
not
done.
going to win every time. As soon as you lose, you go broke. And
Exactly.
so
Exactly. Isn't
that's
that the same principle in poker? When you see them push it all in, well, you either win big or you go home.
Yeah, that's right. And in poker, some of that you see is, of course, it's TV tournaments, and it's done for the showmanship. But generally speaking, it's not a good idea to bet everything you have in a game where there's some chance. I mean, even if you're really good at it, then you might lose. And what SBF did when he started doing this. Betting, it was not betting more than you can afford to lose. Well, I guess that's what it is. Betting more than he had, even though he had good betting situations. So instead of just going broke, he started borrowing money from his investors who didn't know that that's what he was doing. And that's what caused his downfall. And that's what caused him to go to prison. And so it was basically just that if he had just followed a basic what's called a money management strategy, like the fixed fraction betting strategy of Kelly, then that wouldn't have happened. And so,
So he basically embezzled.
well, yes, he did. Well, he embezzled from other investors, and it was and it became like a Ponzi scheme. As he started losing more and more, he'd borrow from some people to pay off others, and then it just all collapsed. And it's a
It's just
shame
Kelly
because
Craig.
he was a smart guy. He is a smart guy. He just didn't know about the basics of money management.
How long did they put him away?
Well, at the moment, it's something like 30 years. Right now, he's in prison in New York, and I think his lawyers are appealing it. And I don't know, it's a kind of a murky situation, but he got convicted, and he is in prison right now. It's rumored, I don't know if this is true, that his parents are holding a lot of money for him for when he eventually gets out, but I don't know. But it's very sad because here's a smart guy, very intuitive, really make these decisions by writing things down on a dinner napkin, and was very good at that. But he just didn't know how to manage his money.
Well, he didn't know when to stop, for sure.
Right,
And
right.
there is a talent to that all by itself.
Right,
As you're
right.
moving down the road of success, there is a breaking point that most
Right.
people have. And then, it's the old Peter's principle. You get to a point where you can no longer be successful, and then you begin to fail. So it's kind of
Right.
knowing yourself well enough.
Right. And knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are. And the Peter principle basically says you get promoted up to a place where you're no longer in your area of comfort.
Of expertise,
Yeah,
right? And
expertise.
I, but I think that happens. I know as a psychotherapist, I think that happens to people is their heads get too big. It's like, I'm wonderful, I'm amazing, everything I
Right.
do is golden, and then it's not.
Right, and then it's
So
not. That's
that
exactly right.
happens. I before our show is over, I wanted you to maybe take just a couple of minutes and explain how your book redefines our understanding of luck, because that's going to help people know to want to go read it for sure.
Okay, well, I talk about things from a statistical perspective, but it's not very, my book is not a technical book. And I talk about, I try tie in these different things and show how the show how sort of in general, lots of things are related. So for example, luck versus skill in a game online compared to what SBF did in the crypto world. And then here's another example. It sounds completely different, but mathematically it's the same thing in a sense of trying to distinguish between luck and skill or luck and synchronicity or some other talent. Accident proneness. So everyone gets an accident. And of course, if you get in an accident while you're driving, you're liable to see your insurance rates go up. If you get into an accident, if you get into a lot of accidents at work, you're liable to lose your job. And so it's the insurance, one of the insurance company's big things is to define and to identify accident proneness. So what does it mean to be accident prone? Well, it turns out that mathematically it's sort of the same thing as saying what's the how do you identify someone who's skilled? It's the opposite of that. It's worse than bad luck instead of better than good luck. And I had a client a few years ago who actually her attorney contacted me. She worked for a company that employed thousands of people across the country, and she was had worked at the company for a few years, and she got fired. And the reason she got fired was because her employer said she was accident prone. Now, she'd had a few accidents, but none of them were serious. And she suspected it was because she was working in a job that generally women don't work in, and that her company just didn't didn't like that. And so we asked the statistician for the company to provide evidence that this person was at, that the client was accident prone. And he gave us this data that showed she had more accidents than average. Well, that doesn't really mean anything. Whether you're better or worse than average could just be good luck or bad luck. Doesn't mean accident prone. But then we looked more carefully at the data and discovered that at this company, about half or even more than half of the employees worked at desk jobs, and the rest worked out in the field. And this per our client worked out in the field. But when they took the average number of accidents, they included the people in the desk jobs.
Sure, to sway it.
And so, that's slightly unfair to the people who work out in the field. So anyway, to make a long story short, we sort of attacked their method, and the mediator ruled in our favor, and the person got her job back. And not only that, she got promoted. This was a number of years ago. She still works for the company today in a much higher position.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, our show is over, and I guess we could probably talk about this for at least another hour.
Oh.
So tell people how they can find your book and how they can get hold of you if they want to talk to you.
Okay, so I have a sort of an active LinkedIn page on my with posts. My name again is Michael Orkin, Orkin. So if you just go to LinkedIn and search for my name, you'll find me. And one of the nice things about LinkedIn is that you don't have to have a subscription, and you can find me there, and then you can message me if you want to get in touch with me. And I always respond to my messages from LinkedIn. Also, you can buy my book, The Story of Chance, What's Luck Got to Do with It, on Amazon or Barnes and Noble. And there's more about my book on my LinkedIn page.
Thank you. And when I hear the title of your book, I always think, what's love got to do with
Right, that's exactly right. And that's exactly why I gave it that subtitle.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. We'll have you back in the spring. And I look forward to understanding a little bit more about synchronicity and how it gets applied to our lives, because I certainly, like I said, I've had many synchronous events for many, many years now. And so I know it happens, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners agree that it has happened in their life as
Yeah,
well.
Lucy, so you're plugged in to the cosmos, and that's a
Yes.
very good thing.
Yes.
I'll be happy to come back in the spring, by the way.
Oh, thank you. All
Yeah.
right, everybody, please go share this show with your family and friends and help them find out how synchronicity may or may not be working in their life. And go check out Michael's book at Barnes and Noble or buy it on Amazon. And we will see you next week, same time, same place. Thanks for being here. Make it your best life. Bye-bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.